This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
I'm sorry to inform the listening audience that this will likely go down in history as one of our worst episodes to date, I watched this movie back in October, and as I was reading the plot synopsis today, I was like, I don't remember this very well.
You know what's wild is it is available on streaming, so you could have just like tuned in to a few minutes here and there, you know.
I know I could have, but like, why?
Seen it in action, zoomed in on Glenn Powell, and decided once and for all if he's hot or too smarmy.
I didn't love it the first time.
I said, oh, we could do Hitman this week. And you said, oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah,
so
no,
I feel like that implies it was a fun movie.
Well, no, I thought it implied that it would be a fun episode because I wouldn't know what was going on and you would get frustrated. And I think that will make for entertaining listening.
That's what's happening.
Right, yeah, yes, yeah. Already. Perfect. Just it's, wait.
You're a fortune teller. I love it. Glenn Powell's movie Hitman, which I had heard about last year. So it was a festival movie or something?
Well, yeah, so I guess it premiered at, it's Richard Linklater is the director, so it premiered at Venice, which sort of seems like an odd place for this movie to premiere, and I therefore thought it was going to be a little bit more like prestige-y, I think, than it is. So it premiered there, then it went to Toronto and got bought by Netflix. I didn't see it at Toronto. I saw it at the New York Film Festival a couple weeks later, which again is like a pretty like prestigious film festival that mostly shows like artsy, like hoity-toity movies. So when I saw it and I was like, oh, this is like sort of a rom-com kind of a thing, like this isn't, I'm not exactly, but like it's pretty,
I mean,
it's very commercial. Like, everything is, like, a little bit fakey. It's, like, not... it's very glossy
and put together.
Yeah. It's not, like... Because it's based on... Loosely based on, like, true events of this guy who was, you know, just a random college professor who would go sort of, like, undercover as a hitman to sort of... to try to...
For the police, yeah.
Yeah, for the police. But this does not have the vibe of like, oh, this is a real movie or whatever. Like, it's very, it's very like Hollywood.
Harry Styles wouldn't know what to do with this. You know, it's a movie, but it's not like a go-to-the-movie movie.
Yes, right. Exactly. But it's not like, you know, Manchester by the Sea or something where you're like, ah, like this is like a gritty picture of these desperate people in the South who are trying to hire hitmen or whatever. It's course, like, no, the whole thing is like very glossy. But so then I saw it then thinking it would be coming out this year for like, you know, award season or whatever. And then Netflix announced that they had bumped it back to, or maybe not bumped it, but just like scheduled it for the spring, which I do think makes sense as a time for it to come out now, because it does feel like more like a summer blockbustery kind of movie than a fall awards movie. But yeah, it was an interesting kind of rollout for it. Also, the strike was going on during this, so he didn't really get to promote it back last fall, Glenn Powell at all. So now he's, you know, doing press and is out and about and is shirtless and various things as he promotes this movie that I believe he was also a producer on, yes?
He co-wrote it.
And was like very, found this story and was very taken with it and wanted to work on it. And I think he does a good job in this, especially the sequences where he is dressed up in these different disguises and sort of doing different accents and things. Like, he really does prove that he is a talented actor, I think.
Yeah, no, Glenn Powell has sort of like been trying to find his footing in Hollywood. Like, he's been in a bunch of things, but there's like sort of, oh, is he a leading man? Oh, is he a, you know, a star? Like, oh, is he just this genre guy? Because he did the Set It Up, which is like a classic rom-com for Netflix.
Well, let's start at the beginning, shall we, Shelby? He was in Scream Queens, and we can never forget that. Playing Chad Radwell.
Well, that's a TV show, and I'm
talking about
his filmography.
Well, yes, but he was also in Spy Kids 3D, Game Over.
Oh, wow. Look at that. You.
It was a cameo role, but now that I'm looking at the lineup, he played Long-Fingered Boy, a classic. He was also apparently in The Dark Knight Rises as Traitor One.
Oh, yeah. He gets punched in the face by Bane.
Oh, okay.
Opening stockbroker. That makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because that's the thing, is like, he has this very punchable face, but then it's also a very attractive face. So it's sort of like, does he play the douchebag like he does in Top Gun Maverick, or does he play the like rom-com, like get the girl guy next door type and Set It Up, or somewhere in the middle, like with Anyone But You? And then he's about to star in Twisters, which again makes him come off as like some sort of douche. A country hick variety. And so it'll be interesting to see how that spins, because it seems like it's going to be, he's like a good guy. He's not like the villain of the film.
Well, and I think like he was in Hidden Figures, but it was a smaller role. And then last year, I think between Top Gun, and then he was also in Devotion, the very ill-fated Jonathan Majors movie that was too long and kind of snoozy. And so I think in some ways, like, they're trying to kind of position him as like an awardsy kind of like high profile actor, but yeah, that really hasn't necessarily stuck. It's hard to, like, he's obviously famous, but it's hard to tell what, like, where exactly his career is heading.
Yeah, it seems like, I think this was a nice proof of concept because he wrote it, and so it's clear he has like comedy chops. He kind of gives me, and I mean this as a compliment, but like John Cena vibes, where it's like, he's good. He knows how to commit to a bit. And so he can be like, he can do the physical comedy. He has good timing, like whatever. And he's sort of this neutral face. Like, yes, he's beautiful. And when you see him doing his little dance in Top Gun Maverick, shirtless in the golden sand, you're like, holy hell, what a beautiful man. But it also allows him to play the sort of schluppy professor here and sort of nearly get away with it. And so
I did not buy him as a professor, really, but sure.
But he looks like, it's not like watching like Brad Pitt try and play like a normie, you know,
like, I don't know. There is something I felt like believable. It was about kind of a little him. Bit more like that. I mean,
I
he
don't
was
know.
Wearing
he just
glasses.
Felt kind of like he's generically handsome, like, not to diminish how attractive he is, but there's something like very blendable about his it factor, you know. I don't know. I mean, and to be fair, you admitted you haven't seen this in a while, so how can I trust your opinion on how well he plays the schlep?
Well, I mean, I do remember vibes, and I also do know what Glenn Powell does look like. And I think that this, I guess I don't know what the original guy looked like, but I think that the
Not
plot,
like that.
Yeah, that the plot of this, I think, would have been funnier, sort of, to watch somebody who was maybe more like a Steve Carell type looking person have to do the, you know, assassin kind of things. But no, I think, I mean, it's Hollywood, so you're obviously going to get hot people even when they have to put on glasses and pretend, gosh, exactly. They're hideous now.
Yeah,
they're just like one of us.
Yeah. And I also liked that for the most part, it wasn't like, oh, this guy's fugly. He was boring, you know? So like the cops he worked with were often like joking about like his normal every day, his real job as professor. He's like a birder. He's very analytical. He loves talking about language and like reason and existence, and his ex-girlfriend is like, you are so dull. And then the reason he becomes more attractive isn't like, oh wow, he learns how to like exercise. It's more like, oh, he has confidence and he, you know, can I don't know. The whole premise is sort of like, I don't know how I feel about this movie. That's the honest truth. That's the crux of it.
I didn't
love it. I didn't like it. I didn't enjoy it very much.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I also did not really like it. I think it's just so, I think it's in a weird no man's land of like, this isn't Fast and the Furious. It's not, you know, a Bruce Willis action movie. It's not Die Hard. It's not Extraction. Like, it's not something that's so over the top that you can, that it's sort of like entertaining in that regard. It's based on a true story. It's sort of set in the real world. But then there are moments where it is so outlandish. And I think it's kind of a little bit of a whiplash going back and forth between this, like, oh, it's kind of supposed to be normal, but then also it's very over the top in other points. I guess the plot of the movie is, yeah, there's this professor. Let me try to explain the plot of this movie that I saw.
Tell me what happens.
So Glenn Powell plays a professor who, like, does some work for the police. I can't remember exactly what he does.
He's
normally
like an IT guy. Yeah. He helps them with, I don't know, IT work.
But then the man who was supposedly like going into these sting operations when people are trying to buy a hitman and, you know, getting confessions and money and wearing a wire from them is like out sick for the day or something. So for some reason or other, can't make it to one of these sting operations.
No, he has a scandal. He's like a dirty cop.
Okay.
So they had
sure
to pinch him.
Yeah. Anyways, he's not there. So they're like, oh, like, Glenn, why don't you go in and do this? And he's like, okay. So then, but there's something inside him that, like, awakens as he is pretending to be another person and in this undercover, like, assassin role. And it alivens him and he really enjoys it and he gets very into doing research on these like perpetrators, I don't know, these people who are trying to hire assassins. He's coming up with costumes, he's doing different accents, he is really like getting into character for this, until one day he goes and the person who's supposed to be buying the assassin is this like super hot girl and she has an abusive husband that she's trying to get him to kill, and he's like, wait, no, actually, like, keep your money, use your money to run away. And then because he sort of like lies to the people, to the police about what happened in this encounter, and also because he has a crush on her, he gets like really entangled in her life and the boyfriend who's like in the mob who's maybe trying to kill her, and then the dirty cop.
No mob is involved, but sure,
whatever. In my mind, he was involved. What does he do?
No, he's just
abusive.
Yeah.
He's just abusive. Okay,
he's just
whatever.
An average
in
Joe.
My mind, he's a drug cartel owner of some kind. But then also the dirty cop is like jealous that Glenn Powell has taken his role, and so he's trying to figure out what happens. And then they all are out one night and they like bump into each other at the bar, and so the other cop knows that Glenn Powell is in a relationship with this woman who is a, you know, like a,
who still thinks that he is said,
oh,
hitman.
Yeah, yes, and he's pretending to be a hitman the whole time. Yeah, which is wild,
which is, yeah, not ethical at all.
And so then the stakes just keep getting higher and higher and higher as Glenn Powell has to like lie his way through things. And then all of a sudden the ex-boyfriend mysteriously dies and you're like, who killed the boyfriend? And then it's the girl. And so then he's trying to help the girl get out of killing the boyfriend. And then spoiler alert, they end up killing the dirty cop. And it's like, things just go from bad to worse. But then the end of the movie is them, like, somehow or another, they've gotten, away with everything. Yes, because they're just like living a happy life, even though they killed the boyfriend and the dirty cop.
Yeah.
So
correct. Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of weird. It's weird. It's I think my issue with it is less
like, what's the lesson?
It's not entertaining, or this is badly done. Like, it's a very shiny, very like easily digestible, entertaining piece of cinema. But I just found myself like bothered with how it, I kept expecting it to go further, like to go deeper or to be more aware of its sort of nebulous ethics on all counts, but it really just doesn't engage with it at all, like except for casually mentioning it. And so a huge part of the first, you know, two-thirds of the movie is him talking about being this fake hitman. And I'm sorry, as someone who, you know, does not believe in the police force as it currently is, I just found it all so icky and unethical for him to exist as this entity being paid to entrap people. And his whole like opening monologue is literally like, hitmen don't exist. And so it's like, well, then if hitmen don't exist, but people are Googling for hitmen, then they wouldn't be able to put out hits anyways. So then you're just entrapping people who wouldn't be able, to go through with this plan because a hitman doesn't exist, except you're playing one, to thus catch them in the act of doing something that wouldn't be possible unless you were playing them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I guess if there's an argument to be made somewhere in there of like, okay, well, if they can't hire a hitman, then maybe they'll do the murdering themselves. And so perhaps this is like cutting off some murders of the past. But
they need to watch that Tom Cruise movie about Minority Report, because you can't be punished for a crime you haven't committed yet.
Well, and also there's a big difference between hiring someone to kill someone and then actually trying to murder somebody yourself.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I agree that I wasn't on board with that. Yeah. I was all like, I know that this is based on a real story, but I'm also like, what is the police force doing just hiring this random man? Yeah,
they do a lot of civilian, like, they do a lot of that.
Really?
I mean, because it's like, yeah.
Like, I could get hired by them to just like,
I mean, you could if you, you know.
Oh, were you saying I'm unskilled? Are you saying you don't think I can pull this off?
If you made yourself available in whatever capacity that they happen to need at that exact time, that they could. I mean, there's like so much police work as civilian informants. It's all dirty. And you know what else is annoying is that they wait until they get paid. Yes, because that's the only way to get like law on their side. But also because police officers get to keep anything they take in a raid like that or in a sting operation like that. And so they're just getting this money in. It just drives me nuts. I did not enjoy that. And I did not enjoy the police angle of this, because it wasn't like they were saying like, LOL, look at how bad they are at their job or something. You know, it wasn't like,
oh yeah, no,
emphasizing
the
bunglingness of these people. And it also wasn't like making some sort of indictment on the force itself with this dirty cop. It was all so like superficial. So in the end, it was just like, oh, this was just a journey to like see how this guy could learn confidence. Like, I don't know. It was just kind of confusing what they wanted us to walk away with.
Yeah, because I think that there's a certain version of this that's maybe something more like I Care a Lot, which I really loved a couple of years ago, where it's like, okay, it's all of these bad people and they're pulling off these like horrible schemes and like kind of trying to one-up each other. But then you get to the end of the movie and sort of the takeaway is like, wow, the world is full of all of these horrible people, and lots of times they do get away with things just because they're bad and the world is bad. But like, that's really not what this was saying. This is sort of saying like, oh, like, the girl was hot and they were in love, and yes, they killed these people, but they were sort of bad people anyways. So it's like, it's good that they got off,
and like, he's entrapping these people who are in desperate situations and they're going to prison, and he's like on the stand saying like, well, I just meet them where they are. But then he's fine with him and his girlfriend getting away with murder, and there's really no exploration of like what that demands of a psyche to like be able to compartmentalize your own actions that way.
Right.
And so it was just kind of like, it was very confusing, and like, oh, every single person he like does the hitman shtick for is gross and, you know, played up like this sort of, I don't know, they're in New Orleans or something.
Yeah, they're somewhere in the South. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So they're all like hicks. They're all, you know, gun-toting, like redneck type, white trash vibey things. Until suddenly there's this gorgeous femme fatale who floats in and is just like, and then I was like waiting for her to be, you know, a little bit, maybe like the pulling the strings, knowing him, manipulating him, or like the grand, like evil drug lord or whatever it could be. But instead it's just like, she gets away from this abusive guy pretty easy, you know, $2,000. He doesn't seem to bother her too much. But then she kills him anyways. Like, the stakes just didn't seem that extreme, not to diminish, you know, domestic violence. But I just was waiting for some sort of twist to explain how she was both so, like, easily able to find a house and get a job and, like, live this breezy, beautiful life and have this flirtatious, open relationship with the hitman, but then also feel so at risk that she had to murder her boyfriend ex after all.
Well, then it's weird to be dealing with such like heavy subject matter as, yeah, like domestic abuse, the prison system, murder, and then have it be so jokey at other moments where it's like, oh, he's wearing weird wigs, he's doing weird accents, he has false teeth. Like, there's just something tonally feels off about this, I think, as well.
Yeah, it's like, it's very much reminiscent of like The Man Who Knew Too Little, which is a movie I grew up watching too often, probably. But the like, it's a premise where a guy thinks he's like doing some sort of like adventure pack activity night, but is actually embroiled in this sort of assassin CIA situation, and he ends up mastering it just because he's so clueless. And then in the end, he becomes this sort of super spy, you know, classic bungling hero.
Yeah.
And so like I feel like if they'd done that, it would have been more like, I would have leaned into the humor more, because like, yeah, he's funny, the character bits are funny, like there were some charming moments, but it just felt kind of spread thin as a whole piece, because he so quickly accepts that she murdered someone and he is going to protect her. And like within 20 minutes, you know, of finding this out, he's like helping her lie while being bugged so that they can get away with it. It was just kind of odd.
Also, like, I thought that Glenn Powell is a good actor. I think the woman in the movie, what is her name? Adria Arjona is bad.
Like, oh, no. I
think she's hot, but I think she was, like, actually a bad actress.
I don't think so. I mean, to be fair to her, she's a very thinly drawn character. And I thought right, that would yes, be part yes. of the punchline is that, oh, she was manipulating them all along. And, like, look at how dickmatized he was. But instead, it's just, yeah, she's just badly written. So that's on Glenn Powell, turns out. Can't write a female character. But yeah, no. And what's interesting is this movie was like very much hyped up as like, oh, a return to the sexy, like sex driven romp. Like, I don't know. I saw so many reviews that were like, oh, they brought back sex appeal. They brought back sexual chemistry. Like, yes, the sexy comedy's back. And I was like, I didn't feel like it was that sexy. I don't know.
I don't remember it being sexy. So, you know, of the things I remember 8 months later or whatever, it being sexy is not one of them.
Yeah. I mean, it may be like I don't know. Maybe I'm just like way too edgy, you know, like I just like, I'm
that's
so
a good
X-rated.
Point. Yes.
Yeah. It's just like, this is child's play. But it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, it all just felt so disjointed until the last 5 minutes. And then it's so easily cleaned up that there's absolutely no tension that they'll get away with it. Like, it's just so clean cut and organized and presented that it's just like, I don't know. It's like, I felt like irritated at the end because it wasn't like a huge life change for him. He just like manifested some confidence into his life. And even though he lied and misled this woman for so long, she was like, oh, well, you saved my life, so I guess I love you anyways, Gary. And then he's like, well, maybe the police system isn't that helpful, so I guess I can manipulate it to my own means. And it's just like, I was like, wait, what happened here? I feel like there wasn't a clear, like, I feel like I walked away from She's All That with a better understanding of like her confidence growth and like a rise and fall in character.
Well, that's an incredible movie.
Yeah.
So we can't be comparing this to masterpieces like She's All
That. I know, but it's like, I mean, guys, all she did was take off her glasses and like brush her hair, and you got this guy 27 costumes, and I still didn't understand why he found it so easy, seamless, to be this fake Ron for so long and so easily without ever having a slip up. And he never mentions birding again. Like, it's like, I'm just confused.
Wow. Good point. Good point. Good point.
Yeah.
I think this is interesting to talk about Richard Linklater's filmography for a second while we're here.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Well, I think it's weird because he has the Before trilogy, which is so good. Like, some of, I think, the like most well-written, like, just like talky conversational movies of just like a couple sort of wandering cities together. And then the rest of his filmography, well, and then he also has Boyhood, which I really like. And then it's just like so many weird things lurking around in here. Like, he did Last Flag Flying, which I believe was like a Steve Carell like war, like our sons died in the military kind of thing. He did Where'd You Go, Bernadette, the cursed movie. Me and Orson Welles, is that that's like a Zac Efron thing that I feel like nobody watched. Just like such strange, movies.
I feel like we've got to stop typecasting directors in a way, because I feel like, I don't know, it wasn't.
But he was a writer on most of those.
Well, okay, but I guess, so you're saying, like, what is he interested in, or like, pick a lane, or what?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying more of like, how can you create something like that's such high quality and like well regarded, and then also just be creating like random crap, you know? It's like,
I mean, ask J.K. Rowling, am I right? Like, it's like,
I mean, yes, true, but I think it's weird that his good stuff is in like a completely different genre than his bad stuff, and yet he continues to go back to the bad stuff genre and not the good one, you know?
Well, he's waiting for the boy to grow up, right? We get that in another 10 years or something. The promised Boyhood sequel. Aren't they?
Oh, I don't know about that. Merrily We Roll Along, that is the like 20-year shot version of that with Ben Platt and Beanie Feldstein and Paul Mescal is apparently, you know, continuing on. But that we won't have for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't remember. I just remember when Boyhood came out, there was talk that there would be a sequel, but again, waiting 10 years or whatever. But I don't know if that was scrapped because I did not enjoy Boyhood. And you know what? I do feel like I sense a theme between Boyhood and Before Sunrise and Hitman in that there's just a lot of male energy happening here. And it's not something I enjoy. I have to be honest. It's not. I didn't see the other Befores, which I hear are better. But it was a lot of Ethan Hawke talking in both of those movies.
I guess so. I mean, like, obviously Boyhood has a lot of boys in it, although Patricia Arquette is good in that movie. But I feel like the Before movies are like pretty back and forth, and especially in the first one, like, yes, Ethan Hawke is talking a good bit, but it's like, I think you always think that the woman is like the smarter person, and he's kind of like a I don't know, aimless.
I really do. I mean,
I didn't get the sense, at least when I watched it, that we were supposed to be like, ah, yeah, he like really knows what he's talking about, and she's just sort of like playing hard to get. It's like he's kind of dumb and aimless, and she's like has her crap together, and she, for whatever reason, is like hanging out with him, which is maybe the question of the movie. It's like, why does this woman want to be with this man? But
yeah, exactly.
He is Ethan Hawke, yeah. So he is attractive.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Everyone has their weakness. No, it's been a while since I've seen it, and I'm sure I'd like it still. It's just,
there's no cops in it that I remember, so there's that.
I'm less confused by his filmography. I mean, it is weird, but I feel like, who is the guy who did Ice Age and then, oh yeah, Mad Max? So it's like, there's a lot of directors. Oh,
Happy Feet.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there playing around. I mean, your favorite, Sean Levy, right? Hasn't he done dramas at some point?
I mean, sort of. He did the one, he did the All the Light We Cannot See for Netflix. But up until then, like, he mostly did bunches of family movies, which he does pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And it's also hard when it's something that's like a passion project for multiple people, like having Glenn Powell be a writer and producer too. It's always like, okay, like who was calling the major shots? Like what was lost in translation, and who was, you know, was there maybe someone phoning it in a little bit on the storyboarding here because it was just like a fun little, I don't know when they did this, a pandemic writing session for Glenn Powell. I don't know. But it felt indulgent in strange ways and kind of shallow comedy in others. And so I feel like that's where it struggled to like actually become a movie that would ever stand the test of time. And that's why I'm confused by the high score.
Oh, yeah. I don't understand why it has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. That feels wild. Like, if you told me this movie had like a 75-80, it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense, it's like good enough, but I don't think that this is that good.
Yeah,
to have like a something in the high 90s, like no critics were giving this a bad review, none.
Well, I think it's like speaks to maybe the problem with Rotten Tomatoes, where it's like, if it's a fine movie, the score is always going to be a little bit heightened because it's just based on averages. And so it's like, if no one's saying this is trash, then it's going to be like, wow, this is a great film. But on Metacritic, which is a little bit more about literal scoring from critics, it has like 82 still out of 100 and is like called, like labeled a universal acclaim, you know? So it's like, I don't know. I feel like this happens every now and then where there's a movie that's just beloved and I don't get it.
Yeah, like Barbie.
But Barbie, at least you have to admit, had
the crafts.
Yeah.
Had like the music and the acting was really good. Yeah,
to its story in a way.
Yes.
Whereas this is just kind of cobbled together in a, I don't know. It just felt kind of like lacking. And so it surprised me that everyone loved it so much.
I guess if people love it, what they love, like Glenn Powell doing weird accents and costumes and stuff, like, is that the part that they're really going
but
for?
But barely, like, it's like on the cover or whatever, the poster is like all his different hitman outfits. But if you take any of those little bits, it's 5 minutes of the movie. Like, it's like, that's what confused me, is I expected there to be more tension in like his multiple personalities and like running into these people he put in prison or whatever, like, obviously, who knows, but like I kept expecting there to be some moment where he had to like juggle a situation, and not a drama situation like, oh, my girlfriend actually did kill her ex, but more like, oops, I started talking as if I was, I don't know, the Matrix assassin, but I should have been in character as the cowboy assassin, or like having a tattoo that he forgot to take off, or, you know, like something where this double life starts to influence his real one. But they really kept it clean. Like, he never ever slipped up with her, like, to be extra nerdy about something or like talking about his workload or whatever. And then it's like, well, then how am I supposed to believe you guys are in love? Because that is just red flag city. You don't even, you're not even in love with a real person.
Wow.
I know.
I'm also now looking at the filmography of the actress, and this is like one of the most cursed movie lists I've ever seen. She was in Pacific Rim Uprising, yes. Then Life of the Party, the movie where Melissa McCarthy goes back to college as a mom with her daughter. Then Triple Frontier, the Netflix action movie. Then Six Underground, which I think is maybe another Netflix movie. That's the Michael Bay one.
She was in
Morbius. Yeah, and then the reboot of Father of the Bride. It's like, ugh.
I don't blame her, okay? That's racism in the industry. I mean, you can't judge
I'm not saying it's necessarily her fault that she's ended up in all these movies, but I'm like to be in a movie lineup where they're all that bad is like shocking a little bit. Like, there's not one good movie in this list unless I don't know what Sweet Girl is, but a Jason Momoa movie. Okay, well, we know that's not good.
That's rough.
Yeah. She's in something coming out later this year called Blink Twice, a thriller directed by Zoe Kravitz, starring Channing Tatum.
That's good. I saw a trailer for that. I think you'll like it. I think it's supposed to be good.
I think it's from
the people who did Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
I'm like, was it at a festival or something? Like, how do you know? I don't remember.
I just remember the trailer. I think I saw it this year sometime earlier. So I don't know when and where it's supposed to
be. Oh, yeah, August 23rd it's supposed to come out.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So let's wait. Let's wait and pass judgment then.
It's written by E.T. Feigenbaum. I don't know, who doesn't have a Wikipedia page. Taylor Swift.
Oh my gosh, she's been hanging out with Zoe Kravitz and Channing Tatum. Oh my gosh,
that's so true. E.T. Feigenbaum is Taylor. Okay, wait, I'm Googling.
E.T., what's the last name?
E.T. Feigenbaum.
How many letters are in E.T. Feigenbaum?
No, we can't. How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Oh, phew. Okay.
Dang it. Okay, he appears to be a white man. But
does he look like the man from the music video?
I'm going to his
in costume.
I'm going to his Wikipedia page. He was a writer on High Fidelity, which was also a Zoe Kravitz thing, and that's his only credit.
Okay, well, you told me he didn't have a Wikipedia page.
Well, no, this is IMDb now that I'm on.
Okay. Well, it still could be. I mean, we'll see. I'll dig into that for sure.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for taking it under advisement.
Yeah.
Do we have anything else to say about this movie?
Not to yuck anyone's yums. Yeah. If you liked it, I'm happy for you. I ACAB personally and forever, so.
Well, yes. I mean, same. We can agree on that. That
includes the civilians hired, especially if they go on to kill other civilians.
Well, it's like, especially if the... If, like, you are... Because then I feel like you're, like, crossing the picket line somehow. You know, it's kind of... It feels like a scab if you're a civilian, but you're working for the cops.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I really hate that.
That's a red flag. That's... Ugh.
A big red flag.
Yeah. I'd be like, what's in this for you, sir? So... Yeah, and it seems like if it was that easy for him to get the life that he wants, like living passionately and being a good lover for once, like it's like, well, what was holding you back? And if it's just because this girl was so hot, then you're just the most shallow man on earth and I don't care about you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know? Good point.
So I'm hoping Twisters is the sweet spot for me. I'm really looking forward to that movie. So I believe that will bring me around on Glenn Powell.
I'm also excited for Twisters. Also, it's Daisy Edgar Jones, who I think is a good actor. I'm excited for that.
Is that our next movie? No, that's in July.
No.
What are we doing?
Well, next week I'm off.
Okay. Living your life. Good for you.
Happy I'll to be hear in it. Fire Island.
Of course.
Let me. Well, the only place that I can travel, because I'm not really supposed to be flying.
Yeah.
So, you know, give me a train
I didn't
to a
say anything. Yeah,
truck
I,
to a whatever, whatever. Yeah. I could sense the judgment. And then.
It's Inside Out, too. So, big loss. Then it's A Quiet Place.
Well, no. It's Kinds of Kindness, the Yorgos Lanthimos, like 3 hour long, which I know you're excited to watch.
I don't
know. There's also The Bike Riders, which I really don't know anything about, but stars Austin Butler and Mike Feist and Jodie Comer. I'm like, that could be something that we might have to do an episode
on. Wait, did you watch the Please, Please, Please music video from Sabrina Carpenter?
Yes, with the Barry. Boyfriend. Yes, with Barry Keoghan.
Yeah.
Yes, I didn't see that.
Cute hard launch. What are your thoughts?
I of them as a couple, sort of weird, but sure. Like, I don't know, a very interesting pairing, I guess. Yeah. I'm also intrigued to see what Sabrina Carpenter does, because she's also a good actress. Like, she was in Emergency, and we really liked her in that. Like, I think that now that she's sort of more famous, she has a lot of potential of different stuff that she could do. So I'm excited to see where that goes.
No, I've been on the Sabrina Carpenter train. Like, I love her last album. I'm excited for this new one. And you know what? Like, he's nothing, but he has the Midas touch, I guess. Like, the High School Musical, the musical, the series, you know, dates Olivia Rodrigo, boom, instant huge celebrity.
Barry Keoghan dated Olivia Rodrigo?
High School Musical, the musical, the series guy did, and then the girl who inspired Driver's License was Sabrina Carpenter.
Oh, yes.
And now
okay.
they're both
so
far
saying
beyond.
Whoever he dates next has the... Well, didn't he come out as gay?
He came out as Christian.
What?
He became a born-again Christian. Like, he became like a Jesus lover.
Joshua Bassett.
Nothing wrong with that, I guess. I don't think so.
And, like, we've been following vastly different careers here for him. Okay, he's 23. I'm going to personal life section. Yeah, on May 10th, 2021, he came out as a member of the LGBTQ+ community during an interview.
Okay, but
January 2021. Well, the plus is the cross for Jesus.
Exactly.
Bassett became seriously ill and was hospitalized with septic shock and heart failure.
Yeah,
in 2021.
Then he revealed
that he had negative body issues also in 2021.
He was routinely
abused in childhood by an unnamed older man. Now we're at it. In February 2023, he became a Christian and was baptized in the Evangelical Church, Bethel Church, in response to criticism over some of the church's views, which included opposition to homosexuality. Bassett said that he, quote, visited the church and happened to get baptized there, end quote, and that he, quote, did not endorse, end quote, all of their beliefs. So, I'm always happening to get baptized.
A classic situation, yeah.
Oops, fell in the tub.
Like, oh, well, guess I'm getting baptized today. Oh, that's funny.
What does he have coming up? Just a lot of High School Musical, the musical series.
It's hilarious. So anyways, I don't remember why I brought that up, but
maybe it's sort of like a reverse Challengers, where he kind of like slept with both of them, and then they became these big stars and had to face off against each other.
And now they're friends.
And he's injured.
To that part yet.
Yeah. They haven't got to the part where they groan over the net together.
Well, I mean, something that might turn you against Sabrina is that she's buddy buddies with Taylor Swift. So
I mean, I am not the turn against Sabrina is a generous term because I'm not sure I was ever quite with her. Like, you know what I mean?
She's okay, fine. Point against her, as you make your judgment.
And I also didn't really like Olivia Rodrigo, but I like her now more that Taylor Swift sued her for half of her money and she's out to get Taylor. So I actually do think I'm going to have to go team Olivia Rodrigo for this. But she took half the sales of Deja Vu.
Yeah. I know.
Because it sounds vaguely like some song of hers. And here's the thing. This is actually, I've just realized what Taylor Swift's new business plan is. If you make enough songs, every other song will sound vaguely like at least one of yours, and then you can sue them. You know what I mean? Like, that's why she keeps pounding out all of this. It was just
pure power.
All of this information. You're like, this sounds like a bonus track on the Taylor's version of my fourth album, so therefore you owe me $100,000.
Did you read my anti-Taylor Swift post I wrote? I thought you would like it.
Wait, but no, when did this come out?
I guess you're not subscribed to my Substack, so...
No, I am subscribed to your Substack.
It was when she was battling for number one when Billie Eilish's album came out. And I just had to vent some of my feelings about this very topic.
Tell me...
Olivia and Billie.
Tell me on the podcast what you wrote.
Oh, okay.
You
want it on record?
Yes,
Well, no, it was just Billie Eilish was coming out with her new album. And Taylor Swift decided on that exact day to release three new variants of her album. And then they both started to release variants. So there was like just tons of different variants going around, which, again, Billie was getting into a mess because she had come out and said like, oh, there's so much waste. Like, I hate people who do variants type thing and then does them. But what annoys me is that Taylor Swift.
This is the physical albums, or the...
No, it's all of it. It's digital and physical count album sales. Okay. For they were battling for the top number one album spot, and of course their numbers are just obscenely beyond anyone else in the top 10. And so it just seemed like if Taylor, who's like a megastar on her mega tour, billions of dollars in, still cares about metrics like this, it just feels gross, especially going against an up-and-coming artist who she continues to like really, I don't know, there just seems to be a resistance there because Billie Eilish seems to always be taking jabs at Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift doesn't acknowledge her, and it just reminds me of the Olivia Rodrigo situation where once these artists start coming for her audience, you know, once they come start playing close to her numbers, she gets so like possessive and very anti-feminist according to her own definition of the thing of women supporting women. And I just feel like there's a pattern there that's very interesting and sad and frustrating.
Well, she's clearly obsessed with these numbers and records and scores and things in a way that feels separate from like doing well or making money. Like weird like obsession of
It's just validation. It's just ego, which is, you know, her right, but then it's annoying when she tries to play off like, oh my gosh, like when she came out this last week and like stood up for Lady Gaga, like I was like, girlfriend,
oh yeah, that was so annoying. And it's like of all the things I said, I did see a tweet that was like, ah, shoot, Taylor Swift misread all of the Twitter comments. People were asking her to stand up for Gaza and she read it stand up for Gaga. Which it's like, it's like of all the times and of all the things to weigh in on,
it's because this is what people have been,
and it's like, and it's because like Lady Gaga does not need you and does not care. Like,
yeah, no, it's like, not at all. It was a chance for her to come out against pregnancy rumors about herself, because everyone's been talking about like, you know, and it is gross and it would be frustrating. And like, that's totally a fair and valid frustration to have, but to use her post yet again for like the most superficial, the most shallow, the most selfish reason is just like frustrating.
Well, she is a very selfish person and she's living in that, like, not to you know, bring up the V word again, but she's very like victim-y in that like somebody wronged her, like wronged her in air quotes, like forever ago, and like she cannot get over some of these things with people. It's like, you are a billionaire. You have more money than anybody else. You have more sales. You have more this. It's like, you have lost your like right to sort of be like still going after some of these people who have moved on and are also like such small fish at this point.
Deranged. Well, because it's just like,
it's like, use your power to take on things that are actually like bigger than you, that you could be punching up at. Oh
my gosh, I love Chapel. She's my fave.
Oh yeah, no, she's incredible. Love Chapel Roan.
Yeah,
so. I've loved her for quite some time. She's been big with the gays.
I know. You guys are so possessive of it. It's just wild.
Well,
I mean, I've been on the Chapel train too. I just don't make it my whole personality.
Well, then you really aren't a fan if you don't make something your whole personality. Remember, you did make Taylor Swift your whole personality for quite some time. So
I disagree with that. I think I'm a well-rounded individual.
What are the other parts of the well-roundedness? Could you list some examples? I mean,
movies and TV. So there was Jurassic Park in there and, The Bachelor for a while. So
I stand very corrected. Very corrected. Good restaurants. I'll say that for you.
I do things as a compliment. Okay? I'm not like crying.
You're hitting up people at dog parks. Yeah, trying to shake them down for friendship.
It's like, just think about peak Swiftiedom. I was in the Reputation tour movie, right?
Yes.
But compared to the other audience members in said tour movie, I felt very calm and collected in my appearance. So,
yes, relatively. That's true. Yes.
So that speaks to how in it I was without it being everything I was.
Yes, you were a low-grade cult member.
Yeah.
That was your second, the term? High stakes religion, or what's
yeah,
what's it
high
called?
Demand, high demand religion.
Yes,
yeah.
High demand your religion. Yes,
was,
you've been in
I
two.
I used to it. Yeah, I knew how to dance that line a little better with the Swiftie dance.
It's like Taylor, like she only cares about herself, and the longer that we are separated from the Miss Americana era of Taylor Swift, the more that was clearly just a publicity stunt and she cares about nothing talking about in that movie.
I mean, you know what's interesting is I think she cares, I just think she's selfish, you know, so it doesn't it doesn't weigh on her in any way. So it's not.
No, the only things that weigh on her are like, how can I beat these other little pop stars into smithereens? The thing that I do think is interesting, though, is like every celebrity's career does eventually decline. You know, it's like she cannot be on top for forever. At some point, someone will pass her on some of these things. And I'm interested to see what that looks like in the
future. I think that's what her reasoning is she's like, well, I'm going to enjoy this while I can type thing. But it's like, I already had to stop one podcast because I became too much of a Taylor hater. So I can't do it again here. Okay. I just can't. Well,
You think I'm going to make you stop this
podcast? No, but I think some of our listeners are from Swiftish still, so I just want to respect that. I mean, I still listen to her music a lot. I still will go to a concert probably again if I can get tickets. So
I mean, I've been a Taylor Swift hater the entire run of this podcast. So if they've been listening, they've been hearing the truth from moi. Somebody
I just find
her
so
on Instagram and said that they're listening through our entire archives, and they were like, oh, you just mentioned that the new House the House of the Dragon is in development. Did you do an episode on it? And I was like, I have no idea. Like you expect me to remember what we did episodes on? Like, more than a month ago? Like, I have no
clue. We did not, let the record show. We did not do one on House of the Dragons.
Did you watch House of the Dragons?
No, I watched the first episode, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, well, it's coming back.
If anyone has questions, ask me. Matt is useless. That's the main theme of our podcast. If yes. you haven't picked up on it yet.
That's also true. Fair enough. Okay, well, we filled up the time at the end of this episode after not really having anything to talk about for Fall Guy because I not Fall Guy. What was this movie called? Hitman. Same difference. What was worse, Hitman or Fall Guy?
Oh my gosh, Hitman. The Fall Guy is such a fun movie. Okay.
Let's all calm down. Okay.
The Fall Guy is
a
great movie. I'll agree.
The romance is good. Yes. Yes. Okay. And yeah, I like Emily Blunt.
Calm down, sir. Okay. Please.
Okay. Oh, whatever.
I'd rather have done a whole new episode about the Fall Guy than this Hitman. So there's no cops involved in the Fall Guy. In fact, it seems to be a very anti-cop situation.
There were cops involved in the Fall Guy. They were chasing. Okay,
they were bad. They were inept. And they were Australian. So I don't know if all Australian cops are bad.
Australian cops are bad? Do we dislike police everywhere? Or is it just America?
Oh, cab.
I feel like in some places they don't even have guns. Did I make that up?
No, that's very true.
Yeah.
Interesting. No, it's a truly American problem.
Okay, so. Well, we'll be gone next
Anyways.
Week. And then the following week, we'll be talking about there's the Russell Crowe exorcism movie. There's a lot of fun options. Inside Out 2 is looking better and better the more we talk about this list. Maybe it'll be good. I'm going to see it tomorrow, so I'll keep you posted.
Oh, cute. Yeah, keep me posted. I do love... Oh, do you watch The Bear? We can do an episode on The Bear season 3 coming out soon.
No. Well, I've watched half of the first season, but I feel like I could catch up. I want to watch The Bear.
Yeah. Second season is so good.
That's dropped week to week?
Yes.
Or is it dropped all at once?
I don't know. I can't remember.
That seems like they'd be stupid to drop it all at once.
I know, but it's a Hulu, isn't it? So maybe... Oh, yeah, that's weekly.
I thought Hulu's it was FX.
Well, I think it's like partnered with them or something.
But FX is weekly because it's like on TV.
Yeah. I think it is weekly.
Okay, so we'll figure that out. We have some time. We have some time. Okay. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Bye.